Okay, well, we might make a start, people. All right. Okay, I would like to thank everybody for coming to the country session. We're from the country and we like it that way. Yes, it is actually a title of a country and western song, and we have Ricky Chaplin to thank for the title because he came up with that. So, yes. We all live in the country for various reasons. It's either because we've moved for work, for family, we grew up there and decided to move back, whatever it is. And there's, you know, advantages to living in the country. Sure, public transport's a bit dodgy. If you get it, there may not be a taxi service. Services are hard to access, but we also have opportunities that the people in the city don't have. And let's face it, often it can be cheaper. Certainly rents are cheaper and house prices, depending on where you live. Now, just as a bit of background, I'm Katrina Taylor. I live in Horsham, so I'm halfway between Adelaide and Melbourne. I'm actually closer to the South Australian border than Melbourne, so it takes me 4 hours to get to Melbourne. So, yes, I've lived there for 18 years, lived a good part of my life in country or regional areas in different parts of the country, and I love country life. I think it has an awful lot to offer, and I'm keen for everybody to be able to maximise the opportunities they have and to take full advantage of all that the country life we have takes to, you know, has for us. So today we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to explore some of the issues that we face as country people and look at strategies. So you're going to do work. You're not just going to listen to me for the next hour. No, sorry. We are going to do some work. And so you'll look at some issues, which I will give you, and work out some strategies, including how we, as people who are blind or vision impaired, can have input into BCA's work and support their work on these issues, and how BCA can support us. As well, we're going to pull together everybody's tips and tricks for living in the country so we can put them up on the website. So it's not just whoever's listening in on the streaming or who hears here today that gets the benefit of our wealth of knowledge. It's everybody else that's out there. As well, if we come up with any recommendations that we want to go to the session this afternoon, we will do that also. Now, also, I forgot to mention, like every good session, we have lollies. Well, I had to make you all come to my session somehow. So as I come around, what we are going to do, we're going to do a roll call, but I want you also to tell us the name of the town that you live and give us a sense of where that is. So, for example, I'm from Horsham in Western Victoria, 4 hours away from Melbourne. So if you could give us a reference point as to, say, how far it is from the capital in your state, that would be great. Okay. All right. Oh, man, people are spread out all over the shop. All right. Okay, well, we've got a couple of likely lads here.
Yes, Skull King.
Hi, I'm John from Perth, Western Australia. We're about 4 hours flight from here. I don't live in the country. I live in Bayswater, but my wife keeps saying, "Let's go to the country." I'm going, "There's no public transport. I'm not going." So this is why I've quite thought it'd be interesting to come.
Ben Wilson from Geelong, about an hour from Melbourne.
That's not country. Oh, look, sorry, I'll give you... You got feline. Yeah, good for you. Okay. Stop.
Hi, I'm Rhonda. I've got sight. Husband Terry's blind. He goes to Mullaney a lot, and there is a bus from the closest train station, and there's a bus up to Mullaney from Landsborough, and he uses that with his the card, you know, the special card and discount.
Hi, it's Jonathan Rose, and I'm a guest here from New Zealand. And although I live in Wellington, which is the capital of New Zealand, I have strong country connections back home in New Zealand because two of my sisters are married to brothers, and they live in a place called Whangamomina. So you guys think you've got a pretty crazy place, isn't it? Whangamomina, which is really rural. There's no cell phone coverage. There's no public transport. The general store is closed. They do still have the pub, so that's the main thing. And so... I do spend a lot of time out in the country.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Mosen, and I'm also from living in Wellington, New Zealand, which is about a four-hour plane ride from Melbourne. I don't know how far that'd be if you swam or took a boat over the Tasman. But when I go home back to the States, because I obviously don't have a Kiwi accent, my mom lives out in the country. So I spent my teenage years on a horse farm in Middle Tennessee, and also lived in Central Kentucky. So we like the country. Especially country music.
Hi, it's Frances Gentle. I'm in the room because, as you may know, 85% of the world's people with visual impairment live in rural, remote communities where there's very little of anything. So I'm here just to learn, basically.
Hello, I'm Gaynor Marsh. I live just pretty well just around the corner here in Glen Waverley. I have lived in this area most of my life, except for a short stint of 20 years in Sydney. But I grew up here in 1957. There was nothing here. This was semi-country in those days.
My name's Pauline Cornell, and I live in the outer suburbs of a place called Croydon, which I had to get to know because I'm from Tasmania. And I have relatives scattered around the various parts of Tasmania. Scattered around, so when I visit relatives in Tasmania, they're in different country places.
So you have Lynn Eagers. I live in a city just outside of Brisbane called, well, the part of the Redlands City, so it's sort of to the east or southeast of Brisbane. And I'm here really because, like Frances, as a service provider of Vision Australia, I need to provide service to some of you folks, so I want to hear, some of the ways that you might be able to engage with organisations like BCA and Vision Australia.
I'm David Blythe. I live in downtown Brighton, and which is not rural, but I did originally come from the country. I came from a little one-horse town in Western Queensland called Boulia, which most people wouldn't even know where it is.
My name's Jess Blythe. I'm born and bred in Victoria.
Thank you very much. So as you can also see, not everyone lives in the country, but that's okay. There are people like David who have lived in the country, and there are often people that do a sit in the country for, various reasons. All right, we'll go to the next table. Who's my next victim?
Hello, I'm Annette Ferguson. I'm from Dubbo in New South Wales. It's kind of almost in the centre of New South Wales. It has a population of about 45,000, so it's kind of like a little city in the country, and it's a really good place to live. I'm hoping that I can get some help with a couple of issues that I have this morning, possibly. Thank you.
Good morning, my name's Jo. I currently live in Yass, which is about an hour bus ride outside of Canberra. I've also lived on a property. I was a llama farmer for a number of years, and that was pretty much in the middle of nowhere. That was near a small town called Taralga, which was quite a distance from anywhere.
Good morning, my name is Bill Jolly. I live in Mount Waverley, which is two train stops from here, so I'm pretty local. I'm a city person, therefore. But as a director of Vision Australia, I'm here to listen and learn about the needs and priorities of people who live in regional and rural parts of Australia.
My name is Stephen Belvin, and I currently live in a place called Raymond Terrace, which is a stupid name for a place. Everyone says, well, that's the street. Where do you live? It's north of Newcastle. It's a regional area. It's north of Newcastle by about, probably 40 minutes an hour. So it's not really country. But I guess one of the advantages... Yeah, that's right. One of the advantages that I have, I guess, is I spend a large part of my life travelling around Australia. I've been probably around it half a dozen or more times. And when we're travelling around in the job that I was in, we often stayed in one town for one day. We could be in seven different places, in a week, and cover a lot of ground. And when you're vision impaired, you get a pretty interesting perspective on a lot of challenges, good and bad, all that sort of stuff. So thanks, that's me, and Mick.
There you go.
Mick Baker. I currently live in a place called Medford, which is in the Hunter Valley between Maitland and Newcastle. When I was a boy, I came from a one-horse town 9 miles out of Bathurst, which used to be a long walk home after a bad day at the dogs. And I stopped visiting there when they shut the pub in 91.
Hi, it's Glenn King. Grew up in Waverley, ended up in Ballarat for education, and still have a strong interest with friends and people up there. So I'm interested to know issues affecting people in regional Victoria, especially with transport. And yeah, I hope I can learn some more about the issues in that area. Thank you.
I'm Steve Patterson. I actually live in Clayton in Melbourne, but I spent a lot of time growing up in Albury in New South Wales, which is about 3 hours by car from Melbourne. So I have a strong interest in issues that affect people who live in the country. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Richardson. I live in Logan City, which is adjacent to Brisbane. So definitely not country, although sometimes you'd think so because the public transport is so rubbish. But I guess I'm here because one of my great desires, one of my favourite parts of the world is the Northern Rivers area of New South Wales, and eventually it's a sort of dream of mine to move into that area. So it'd be good to get a handle on the perspective, I guess, of people who live in regional areas and find out, you know, what sorts of things to be aware of and the sorts of sacrifices I might have to make, not having good access to public transport and, you know, taxis and things like that.
Hi, Ros Matthews. I'm from Bundaberg, which is a regional city with an agricultural basis. We're the salad bowl of Queensland, and I've lived very rurally most of my life, if not just about all of it.
Okay. Thank you for this table. And also, I just wanted to acknowledge everyone that's listening in on the streaming this morning. Big shout out for everyone who's gotten up early. They're probably still in their PJs, unlike us. But that's all right. Okay, next lot of victims. We'll be next, and we'll go to the right this time.
Okay. It's Anna Briggs here, and I live in Geelong, which is just over an hour on the train southwest of Melbourne. But within the year, I'll be moving to the southeast into a rural area. So I'm keen to hear people's perspectives for that.
Hi, I'm Emma Bennison. I live in Hobart. As far as I'm concerned, that's pretty close to living in the country, but probably not really. It feels like a very long way away to me. But also, quite a few years ago now, I used to live in Lismore, and I was really struck by the differences between living in a metropolitan city and living in a smaller environment. So I'm keen to hear people's perspectives, and I'm also really keen from BCA perspective to make sure that we get some resources out of this workshop that we can put up on our website and actually make sure that we cover this topic in a deeper way than what we currently do. So,
thanks, Em. John Simpson. And Christine and I live in Euroa, which is regional Victoria, halfway between Melbourne and Albury, and we're here because... Actually, the title of this session is absolutely correct. We love it. We moved up there 10 years ago. Small town. Yes, there are some challenges in terms of travelling to other places for various activities and so on and so forth, but it's a great life. Christine.
Thanks, John. And as John said, we moved to Euroa, 11 years ago, but we won't tell him. We do love it. It's best known for its horses, probably, wine, sheep. It's a population of about 3,000 in the sort of what they call the town population. Probably best known overall because that's where Ned Kelly robbed the bank.
Right. Is there anybody else we have missed?
Thank you.
Where did you sneak in?
I just moved, so I thought I'd make it easy. I'm Alex French. I'm a bit of a tech head, actually, so I'm kind of into access technology, which is why I'm here and having a really nice time. Thank you all for being so incredibly welcoming. I'm one of the few that actually lives in a country place, actually, so I live in a little place called Selix Beach, which is about an hour south of Adelaide, out in the McLaren Vale wine region.
Cool, thank you, Alex. All right, did I miss anybody else or are we all good? Right, fantastic. Okay, so we're going to have a bit of a small group discussion. So what we're going to do is I'm going to allocate an issue to each of the three table groups here. And you can have a bit of a discussion around the issue. So it'll be a broad topic. So what we'll look at is one, issues around getting around, orientation and mobility. How do you get around to the places you need to without, you know, getting run over or whatever it is, or get to where you need to go, particularly if you've got to travel elsewhere. We'll also look at, so don't worry, you'll get one issue per table, being connected. As those of us who live in the country know, often we're the only person either with a guide dog or a long cane in town, which is always great because people think they know you, even if they don't. You know, or if you're out without your cane, it's like, oh, you haven't got your stick today. Like, yeah, and you haven't got your brain, but hey, you know, I wasn't going to say nothing. but how can we be connected? Because sometimes also we're not necessarily living in a town that has other people who are vision impaired or blind that are our age and stage of life. If you're a younger person, and let's face it, in the country, if you're under 50, you're young, there might be, say, more people who are, you know, much older who have come to low vision and blindness due to old age. So they're not facing the issues of work, family, relationships, those sorts of things. So having connections with people that are in a similar situation to us. And the final one, which I might dob Alex's table in for this one, is accessing adaptive technology and training to using that adaptive technology. So I'll start with the table of Emma and Alex. You guys can discuss issues around accessing adaptive technology and also training for adaptive technology. Don't blame me, guys. Alex sat at your table. Sorry. So middle table, you guys can have a chat about being connected. How do we make connections with other people who are blind or vision impaired when we live in the country? And the nearest person might be, you know, a good couple of hundred Ks away. Or how do we find out if there are other low people, people who are blind or vision impaired? Do we go play spot the guide dog and spot the long cane down the main street and then go pounce on them? Go, hey, you're blind, so am I. No. We've got so much in common. No. Please don't do that. So you guys can talk about the social connectedness and reducing isolation. Sorry, Annette, did you just admit that you pounced on somebody once? Sorry, we've had an admission.
We're really good friends now. We're very good friends. Story, we're good friends now, and she's actually here today. I don't think she's in this session, but I was swimming at the local pool with a friend, and my friend said, the girl in the lane next to us is vision impaired. And I said, how the hell do you know that? And she said, because there's a little badge at the end of the pool that says vision impaired swimmer or something. And she had put that there so that people would know. Like, I wouldn't have done that, but it turned out to be a really good thing. And so we organised to meet in our local restaurant and so that we could, you know, get to know each other a little bit, because I didn't know anyone else with a vision impairment in town. And so we sat in this restaurant for 10 minutes next to each other, not realising that that we were the person we were meeting. So, yeah, it was quite funny. But she's here today, Jessica, with a guide dog called Carly. So,
okay, so maybe that strategy does work if people are comfortable to do that. So the table down the end here with the two guys hanging off the end, you guys can talk about O&M issues. How do we get around, you know? So pick some away, look at some strategies of, you know, how can we all get around easily? How can we get access to an O&M instructor when we need them? And also some creative ways for managing that stuff. So if everyone wants to go to it, I'll probably give you about 5 to 10 minutes because we're running a bit behind time, but that's all right. And I'll just keep talking to the lovely people listening in on the internet. Okay, well, we might wind it up there, everyone. Sorry to rush you. But If someone would like to take responsibility for reporting back to the group, that would be fine. And since Emma was giving me a hard time, I'll start with her table. Right, so this table at the end had the accessing adaptive technology issues and getting training, etc. So who's going to be the lovely spokesperson for this table? I'm behind you. Behind you. It's like a pantomime. I'm stalking. You going to do it, Anna?
Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, since I took notes. Okay, so we were talking about accessing technology, and it kind of, for us, came down to... we were talking about training and how sometimes it's hard to access the training that you need, even if the training... there's training available online or via like a Skype sort of situation, you still have to have a certain amount of skill with accessing technology in order to access the training. And if you receive training in person, it sometimes can, you can have a long wait time for someone to get to you or for you to be able to get to them, and you can have limited time with that trainer to spend with your technology. And I guess the other thing was sort of linked to O&M in a sense, because if you're living in the country, you don't necessarily have defined footpaths and your GPS doesn't necessarily know that. And also having O&M skills in order to access places to purchase your technology or to receive training. I think that's mainly what we would... Yeah, anything else to offer?
That's a good summary.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much, Anna. So, yeah, I think we've got some interesting issues to look there because, yeah, you are right. Sometimes online training doesn't work for us, or maybe you don't have a really good internet connection where you live. And now that the NBN is also rolling out, people's internet access is changing. So if you're close to the top of the loop for your node... you're probably okay, and there are a lot of people who are actually worse off. So I was like, thank you very much, government. Yes, the NBN was meant to make it all better for the country people. So yes, the importance of how can we then access training that's in a face-to-face situation, because it also makes it easier, like, I don't understand this command, what is it doing? Or why is my computer doing this? It hates me. Please help. Yes. So, and also acknowledging that we've all got different levels of tech skills as well. Now, also, John's just informed me we've got 23 people listening in. So everybody, there's a number of people up with the rest of us. I think that's very exciting. So thank you for joining us, guys. Now I'm on to the middle table where we were talking about isolation and becoming more connected with other country people who are blind or vision impaired. Who would like to be the spokesperson? Oh, it's you. Oh, sorry, the Annette, the lady who stalks other people who are blind. Yes. Right.
Thank you. So firstly, we acknowledge that, that generally sighties, as we call them, they have social issues as well. It's not just the vision impaired people, but we do have other factors that make it more difficult. One of the people at our table, Steve, said that he's very outgoing. He went into a coffee shop, just a local coffee shop, and sort of introduced himself and let them know that he was vision impaired, and they actually connected him with another vision impaired person. So that was one of the factors we decided was, if you're not an outgoing personality, you need to force yourself to be a little bit outgoing. You need to be proactive, basically, because people aren't going to come and find you. And you need confidence, I guess. So, and I think coming to conferences like this, is probably a good conference booster. The importance of the sighted world, yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. I can't read my writing. What have I said?
We also talked about
approaching local councils to see if they could put us in touch with people, local VIP groups, and I'll hand you back to Annette.
Yes, that's what we said about local VIP groups. I know in my town there is a local VIP group, but they're all over 70. And while there's nothing wrong with people who are over 70, I'm not. And I wanted to, you know, mix with younger people. Guide dogs and other organisations like Vision Australia often organise, or not often, but sometimes organise social groups. That has been helpful for some people. They organise, you know, bowling days or come and try days, that sort of thing. We've had a couple of them in my local area. I can't say that I've really connected with other people through those, though. We also just touched on that we need to focus on connecting with everyone, not just other vision impaired people or blind people. It's important to connect with everyone and be part of just the general world, not just the vision impaired group. We also talked about the fact that the internet and social media are fantastic for connecting with other people if you have access to them and if you can use them. Personally, I'm in a lot of Facebook groups for vision impaired people or people with the same condition I've got, and I find that fantastic. I grew up, you know, without knowing anyone else with a disability, let alone a vision impairment, so the internet has been a really good thing. And also we touched on the fact that if you are working, you often connect with other people as well. Was there anything else? Did we cover it all? Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Annette. And yes, you've raised some really important issues there. And it is important to find ways to connect with the other people that you live with in the community as well, because then we find people that have like similar interests. Just because two people are blind doesn't mean they're going to get along. And it's finding people that are into what you're into or into your stage of life or, you know, whatever it is, because being connected is what makes us human. We were made, you know, to have relationships with people, to have friendships, to be part of something, not just to live on a little island or by ourselves, as attractive as that sounds some days. Yes, I am an introvert. Okay, but thank you. So, and I think we can explore some ideas there around how BCA can assist people with being connected. Me personally, I've been actively involved in BCA for the last 9 years, but it's through BCA I've been able to connect with other people who are at my age and stage of life. And that's been really, really good for me. And, you know, we're able to empower each other by sharing ideas, or someone is doing something, I'm thinking, hold on, I can do that. Geez, why aren't I doing that? And that's, you know, really powerful stuff. So now we're going to come down to the final table. Yeah, hold on, Pauline.
I'd like to make a comment because I had some input to this idea that come from the Victorian Central Quarters of the University of the Third Age for regional areas. Telstra with Vision Australia were trying to put a telephone link to country people, rural people, to have groups working with training from Vision Australia. The commission findings were from Telstra, and to link up for an hour and a half or 2 hours, and they do a telephone link up. So it doesn't matter about visual impairment. You're actually linking to stop social isolation in rural areas for people to have discussions of their choice when they can set up a group. So the University of the Third Age, the Central of Melbourne office, and Telstra, and I had a big talk to them last year to learn to be a trainer, to pick up and do training and use this from my home to talk to people. So the social isolation is less, but you're mixing with a broader group of people and anybody over 55. It's a conference call type.
Okay, so it's like a teleconference sort of call. Yeah, so it's a free link, right? Fabulous. Now, getting around orientation and mobility in the country. Who's going to be our lovely spokesperson at this table?
Hi, it's Frances.
All right, so our topic is orientation, mobility and country settings. And some of the issues that we identified were that often cars speed a lot faster in those country lanes than in urban environments. There are no footpaths and often there aren't any real landmarks to link with. So some of the strategies that were being used by the people around this table, and one of them, which was taught by a O&M instructor, was when there's no pavement, as you know, the general rule is you walk on the right side of the road if you're actually walking along a road. So you walk along the right side of the road or the gravel facing the oncoming traffic, and you teach the guide dog to follow the curb or ditch, and you use the white cane or a walking stick, if that's what you're using, on your right with the dog on your left, and teach the dog to go around any vehicles or obstacles and then back to the curb. So anyway, that was one technique. Yep. Now, the second one to do, which was linked to the fast cars, that sometimes the only thing you can do is get off the road and onto the grass or whatever. But then, as you know, in Australia, we've got snakes and all sorts of scary things in that grass. So that one, crocodiles, yes, it can be a bit of a challenge getting off that road. Now, and two, which were discussed, which were linked to the technology discussion. One person has suggested an app on her iPhone which tells her which house number she's up to, so she can use the app to determine the house numbers. And the other one was using the compass on a GPS, and that was because there weren't landmarks to lock in with. And another one we suggested is in those situations where you really can't get out because the environment is just so difficult, maybe you've got to have a coordinate with a neighbour, or that's where the social comes in, and it's really important not to be socially isolated. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Francis. And also, probably crocodiles are a bit more of an issue if you live in Darwin maybe than most of Australia. But thank you, Bonnie. That did remind me, we've actually got a mascot for our section. I've got a little toy plush crocodile that I bought at the op shop the other day. Because when you live in the country, you've got to be a bit wily. Sometimes you've got to do things that people won't expect. You're not always as it seems. And sometimes you just got to move fast. So that's why I've got a croc. So if people want to come and see my crockle, give him a name later, that would be great. Oh. You don't know where... Bill doesn't know where here is. Too much to drink last night, Bill?
Well, saying I don't know where here is, thank you, leads into what I want to say. And I just want to mention something that, talking of iPhone apps, there is a very useful app that some people may know about but the others don't. It's called Emergency Plus, E-M-E-R-G-N-C-Y, and then a plus sign. And it's made by the Fire and Rescue New South Wales, and it's intended to enable people easily to call 000 in an emergency on their phone, and to be able to relay their location to the operator. So in fact, you can call the app's very small and easy to download. You can call 000 or the regular police, say if it's not an emergency, or the SES, the State Emergency Service. And the front of the app displays a street address, if there's one available, but also your geographic coordinates, the longitude and latitude. So if a person is stranded, then you can use this app to call one of those services. And the really good thing is it gives those coordinates, but also, in fact, I often use it just to identify house numbers because it's such a nice, easy interface for us to use. So it's one worth knowing about and putting onto our phone, and it's there if we need it in an emergency, but also we can use it just to help us in navigation because the interface is so good, and it's nice and clear for people with low vision as well. It's called Emergency Plus. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that, Bill. I hadn't heard of that app. That's a really good resource. So now I'm conscious that we're running short of time. How strange that would happen at a BCA convention session. So I think we'll just have a bit of a group discussion now to focus on how we as the country members can have input into and support the work of BCA, and also what can BCA do to support us. So if people have got some recommendations I'd like to make for the session this afternoon, we can still get those in, can't we, Emma? Yes, we can get those in. Fantabulous. Right. So, yes, as you can appreciate, there's more issues than we have time for. We could actually spend a whole weekend on this. So, how can we as country people input into the work of BCA and support the BCA? So it's not just ringing up and going, you know what, Ricky, I think you should do this issue, blah, blah, blah. It's okay, that's easy. Anyone can ring up and complain, but how can we have input into the issues, but also say, for example, with audio description, how can we get the country perspective into the policy and the issues that are raised with government? So, yeah, how can we have input into it, but also support the work that BCA does as well? So it has a broader base for the country members, not just for people in the city. To make it easier for me to find people, if people have got something to say, just stand up, because I may not see your hand in the air. Annette, I don't know.
I've got too much to say.
Right, 25 words or less, Annette.
This one's not on. Okay. So I'm just wondering how BCA could help. I have issues in my town where the council and the RMS refuse to do anything about certain crossings, and which means ultimately I can't go some places because there's just no way I can cross some of the busy roads. I think in the city they kind of look after pedestrians a little bit better, that, you know, there are lots more crossings and lights in the city. But we have a few roads. I've approached the council and the RMS, and guide dogs have approached them, and they just refuse to budge. Is there any way that BCA could help with that? And I don't know if anyone else has these issues as well. And it's not just for vision impaired people either. It's like people with strollers and elderly people who have trouble crossing these roads as well. Just means I can't walk from my house to the main shopping centre because of this one road. So there are only, you know, really busy roundabouts to cross at. So I don't know. Can BCA help with that?
Katrina, it's John, and I've got a microphone here, so save your legs. That's very much the sort of work that our advocacy people are doing. And I think the answer to your question is very much in what you said, that it's not just an issue for blind people. So it's about, at the local level, because after all, the council has to be re-elected by the local community. So it's about developing your strengths with your local community. Certainly BCA is happy to be involved if people decide to take a complaint, a disability discrimination complaint or something like that. We're also happy to help you, and we'll become increasingly involved in helping if we can help you to make those connections with your local community. I'm sure that your council is burdened with, as they would think of it, as some sort of community action group that is representing the voices of the community. So what we need to do is find those connections, and we can assist you to, you know, identify people and do those sorts of things. But the solutions are really at that local level. So the ways in which we can help you connect there are probably the cause of the centre of this. As I say, if it then gets escalated through our policy and advocacy people, we're more than happy to assist with lodgements of complaints under the Disability Discrimination Act and those sorts of things. But hey, you don't really want to go there if you can just use a bit of not-so-gentle community pressure.
Well, yeah. Oh, thank you for that, John. And certainly within the country, it's often can be easier to make those personal connections with staff at council, or if there's like a disability advisory committee, some councils do have those.
Yeah, we do
Yep. Sorry. We do have a local disability advisory group. I can't think what they're called, but there are no disabled people on that committee. And they reported, I think it was 2014, they reported that there are no issues for disabled people in Dubbo, so they're really closed. Yeah.
Okay, so... Katrina. Yeah, so I was also going to say, maybe, Annette, you need to get on this committee and shake them up.
Katrina, can I just come back in here, and I'll come to you in a minute, Steve. Yep. We have a branch in Central West New South Wales, and... Yeah. I'm sure that if you spoke to someone like Mary Lovett, she would be able to give you all sorts of clues as to how you leverage that support you need locally. I mean, a disability advisory group of a council that doesn't have direct representation, that's something that needs to be raised as a public issue through the paper or whatever. And people like Mary and the other members of the Central West branch are very skilled at getting their point across. So... our connection can be to put you in touch there. Steve, sorry.
Yeah, and I'm happy to have a chat with you later about that, because Mudgee would be one of the most accessible towns in the country, I think. John, there's another issue here, and it touches on whether they're called access committees or disability advisory groups on councils, whatever. Recently, within the Hunter Valley, where Mick and I come from, they started disbanding, completely getting rid of the access committees, and not having them. Now, it started in Newcastle Council, and it progressed. It got to about six in the end, right through the Hunter Valley, that had got rid of them. They put in place a disability advisor, and, you know, I received a call from him one day, wanted some advice about, you know, some of the stuff they're doing in town around access, and he said, I don't know why they've got rid of the committee. I've got no one to go to get advice to take it back. So... that position they'd put on with no support was just amazing. But what happened, though, now we're lobbying, and Mick's been doing the same with the councils and so forth. They now had to create what's called Disability Inclusion Action Plan. I wish it was a generic model for all of them. They do have their variations. Yeah, and they're in the process of those happening. And I think it gets back to, well, being proactive, for one thing. But I think you're right, John. I think it almost needs to be something that needs, you know, media coverage in your own town or whatever, because if it gets away like that, you know, it's for us, it's just a big step backwards, especially in the regional area. Got enough challenges to start with. Mick's got a question.
Thanks, Steve. No, can I just, while you're taking the mic to Mick, there is some work that I think we can identify out of that, and we might take a note of it. And that is to start and to rekindle the sort of networks that we had among those disability advisors in local government. Many of those are actually people with disabilities, and we did try some years ago to do some work around building a network there. So, Emma, we might take a note of that as something that we can take forward.
Yep, okay, thank you for that. And, yes, it is important to be able to go back to someone and say, hey, how do I make this happen? You know, we've got a wealth of knowledge in this room, so it's looking at, okay, what are other people doing elsewhere? And Mudgee, yes, I agree, that's a fantastic example. And I think there's nothing wrong with the old name and shame. You know, Dubbo is probably a little bit bigger than what Mudgee is, but to go and say, look, Mudgee's doing this, why aren't we? You know, come on, do we want to be shamed out by Mudgee? You know, a bit of intertown rivalry, why not? Sorry, I don't mean to be mean to the people at Mudgee at all. But sometimes you've got to, you know, do that. Now, Bonnie...
we've got about two minutes.
Two seconds. Okay, I'll make this quick, guys. I come from Dystrumpia, otherwise known as the US. So, but one thing that is quite... Dystrumpia. But one thing is, it's early in the morning, but one thing that politicians and councils, they want votes. That's very important to them. And you're talking about working with the local councils. These issues not only affect blind people or disabled people, but I think, as Annette said, also the elderly. You all vote. That's your voting base. So don't ever underestimate the power of the media. Because if you get out there and get a reporter on the case coming out looking at an area or an issue, and they write an article about it, do a story about it, you could even write it yourself for a community rec, 60 Minutes, that sort of thing, or if you even write the story yourself and get it out there, sometimes that gets the council moving.
Thank you very much, Bonnie. Now, I've just been given the wind-up by Mr. Simpson, and we all know how stroppy he gets if you go over time.
My father's not here, though. I'm John. Mr. Simpson died a few years ago.
Okay, so I would like to thank everybody for their participation and willingness to share. Sorry we have been a bit rushed. We really do need a whole weekend on this issue. But I would encourage people to keep having those discussions and think about ways that we as country members in BCA can connect with each other as well, whether, you know, we create maybe, I don't know, a separate email list, dare I say the e-list, whether we create a separate email list for country members to discuss issues on, whether we organise regular teleconferences. There is a free call teleconference service that we could avail ourselves on. How do we do this so we can stay connected, share ideas, strategies, etc.? Or just go, you know what, I just need to have a whinge. Who's got 5 minutes? I've had enough of this. Because that's also important. Emma wants to say something. Anybody thinks she runs this place?
That's a myth.
Oh, it's a myth. So who really does run the place? Anna? Yeah.
That's right.
Anna runs the place. I just help out where I can. I just wanted to suggest, Katrina, that I've already sort of started to write a recommendation that talks about reconnecting with regional disability access groups. And I was going to suggest, would you like me to just add in there that we will work to develop communication strategies specifically to support people living in country areas? Is that kind of what we want?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just trying to fast check it.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, great.
Yeah, no, that would be good. And also I'm just thinking, well, I have to find an email address for people to email their tips and strategies in for living in the country. So if you've got a really good way that you can find, so bca@bca.org.au. If you've got a really good strategy you use for maybe getting across a difficult road in the country or way you found to make connections with other people, get access to adaptive technology and training, because we'd like to create a resource to pop up on the website. So please email it in, bca@bca.org.au. Sorry.
Thanks, Katrina. We're going to have to call it quits there. But ladies and gentlemen, what a great job Katrina has done in drawing us out.
We're a country and we like it that way.
On 2 hours sleep, Dale, that's pretty good. Thanks, mate. Thanks, Dale. You don't, I need to do my Ricky Kaplan, Dale, and drop it back.
Kick off your boots and come on in. Yeah, we know how to work and we know how to play. We're from the country. We're from the country. We're from the country and we like it that way. Hey.